Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Checking In, a Lodging DEI chat. I'm Leon Thomas with our co-host, Miranda Kitterlin Lynch. Hey, Miranda, how are you?
I'm great, Leon. How are you?
All is groovy. Yes, all is good. I've been watching a lot of college basketball because it's March Madness season.
Yes, it is.
And I'm also excited about baseball because my Baltimore Orioles start in just a short time. Looking forward to them winning the World Series this year.
You know, so I'm going to support you. I don't have a baseball team that I follow, so count me in.
Oh, good. Good. There we go. We've got a supporter for the Baltimore Orioles. Miranda, you know what I'm about to ask.
I'm so ready.
You're ready. Okay. You're ready. All right. This is episode number...
More importantly, we're in season two. Who would have thought 4 years ago when we met on LinkedIn that we would be in episode two of our podcast? Season two, episode... Are you ready? 17.
What?
Now, I could be wrong, but I'm going to go with 17.
But that sounds good. It sounds good. Even if it's wrong, let's just go with it.
Yes.
Season two.
I said it, so it's true.
It's true. That's right. We met 4 years ago?
How crazy is that? 4 years ago, with one little LinkedIn message, has brought all this.
Wow. Who knew? So if anyone's wondering about the power of LinkedIn and networking, it's real. Maybe we'll have to do a show just about that.
We should. We should
talk about it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And this is a perfect opportunity for LinkedIn to jump in and want to sponsor our podcast.
You know, yes. LinkedIn, we know you're listening, LinkedIn. So you might as well sponsor the show.
Get in while you can.
Get in while you can. Yes. So if you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can contact Miranda. How do they get in touch with you, Miranda?
Honestly, the best way to find me, just Google my name, Miranda Kitterlin Lynch. You could even do Miranda Kitterlin. I'm pretty positive that you're not going to find another. I'm also available, of course, on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find, hard to hide.
And you can contact me via email. My email address is leon@theleonthomasgroup.com. Now, Miranda, you know that you said just Google you. Well, I Googled me, right? I Googled Leon Thomas, and a musician came up. So I'm like, oh, man, I can't even drop the same line Miranda's dropping here. Yeah, a musician came up. Now, if you put Leon Thomas Hotels or something like that, then I show up. But
is this where you pull out your brass instrument and serenade us?
Since you've asked... Since you asked. No. Our producer's telling us, please, no, don't do that. Don't do that. So I won't. So we have very exciting to have our guest. I'm very excited to have our guest on today. Can you go ahead, please, and introduce our guest and we'll bring him on and have a great conversation.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a big fan of our guest. Not only does he have a wealth of industry experience, but he's very much a supporter of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I had the pleasure of meeting him in person when we worked on the Alliance for Hospitality Equity and Diversity, AHED, AHED, pardon me. And I was just so impressed with everything he had to say about the topic and just impressed with him as an individual. And I think that this is going to be a great show. And I'm so thankful that he took the time to be on today.
Yeah. Hi, Greg. Our guest today is Greg DeShields. Hey, Greg, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. How are both of you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us. Now, you and Miranda mentioned that you guys were working with AHED. And Greg, you and I met a year ago, year and a half ago, or I can't remember the time frame. We met when I was doing some research on minority hotel managers. And
yes.
you and I first met there and had a great conversation with you. So thank you again for spending time with us. And before we jump into the actual questions and conversation we're going to have, will you jump on the Baltimore Orioles bandwagon with me? And Miranda, will you do that?
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Baltimore Orioles. It's not far from where I am in Philadelphia, so I'm going to say yes. I know some really great people who are in the Baltimore area, so them winning would be fantastic.
Done. Done. We have at least three Baltimore Oriole fans, and I am wearing orange today. Thank you very much.
I love it. Awesome. So, Greg, if you could share with us a little bit about your evolution in the industry. So the types of work that you've been doing in the industry. I know it's tourism most recently. What has been your favorite job that you've had in hospitality and tourism?
Well, you know, there have been all these various chapters to my experience in the hospitality industry. And a big shout out to my alumni academic institution, Johnson & Wales, because it all really began there, to be quite honest. But from there, you know, I spent a number of years working in operations with various hotel companies like Hyatt and Sheraton and Omni, later moving into more independent properties. But I think as I had an opportunity to expand beyond the operational aspect of the industry is where I began to find the work that I really loved the most. For a number of years, I led a nonprofit organization that really created access and opportunity for people from underserved communities to find career paths in the hospitality industry. And I have to tell you, that was one of the most personally rewarding experiences to be able to create paths for people who just may not even have a path. But my experience with Temple University and the School of Sport, Tourism, and Hospitality Management is probably one of the crowning effects of my career. I had the honor of working under Dr. Elizabeth Barber, who created the school, and Jeffrey Montag, who was our associate dean. And I had a very deep appreciation for the 13 years I was with Temple, not just working with our campus here in the U.S., but our campus over in Tokyo as well. And as I segued from that and later moved into more the operational side again, working at the Convention and Visitors Bureau in Philadelphia, leading PHL diversity was just a phenomenal opportunity for me. It was really the passion job that I always wanted. I'd been on the board for the organization for about forever. So then having the opportunity to take the helm for about 7 years was fantastic. And then, of course, most recently, working with Tourism Diversity Matters, really looking at issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion on a national level. But I think what's really important, I think, for anybody who's listening, and certainly the young people who might be considering what are their choices and what are their options, I would say that from my experience and my evolution in the industry is to always look at what can be offered to you. And it's more than just working for a particular brand or working in operations, but it's thinking more broadly about the industry and all the different components that really make up our industry, thinking more strategically, more financially, and just big picture in terms of what tourism actually means to the economy here in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so excited about this conversation, again, because of your wealth of experience in the industry. When you talk about all that our industry has to offer, this is a conversation that Leon and I have had both with each other and with our guest. We find that young people often are not aware of all the opportunities that they are. And when you say hospitality and tourism, people immediately think either housekeeping or checking people in or serving tables. And really, that's not even a tiny portion. That's not even the tip of the iceberg when it comes to our industry. How have you spread awareness about the opportunities that our industry can offer people in terms of a wonderful and successful career?
Well, I do want to start by saying, though, I think there is some intrinsic value for anyone in our industry to really, I guess, for lack of a better word, pay their dues by really having that intimate experience of working with a housekeeping team or working at a front desk and experiencing guests who are happy and not happy. I think you really understand what our industry is when you have that as kind of like the foundational understanding of what we do. But you do evolve into other aspects of the industry. And I think it's important to think beyond the operational side of things. You know, there are certainly aspects of it that are tied to municipalities and how they create economic impact and create jobs for individuals. There's a real creative component that you bring in terms of building brands and destinations. And those aren't necessarily tied to the perspective that's presented when you enter into a hospitality or tourism curriculum, because it's very operational focused. But I would say for anybody, once they've had that chance to get a foundational knowledge of it, to expand into areas that you probably would not even think would be a path for your success. I mean, whoever knew that I would work at an academic institution for 13 years in this industry? And for me, it was one of the most fantastic ways of appreciation of what it means to develop a very well-skilled and knowledged workforce, especially those who are going to step into leadership roles. So I think it's important to make sure that you have a strong foundational understanding of the business, but to make yourself available and open to nuances and aspects of the industry that may not have even thought to be a career path, but certainly one of the steps that you build as you move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And Leon, before you jump in, I would go so far as to say that having worked in guest service, especially at a line level position, I think not only makes you a better hospitality industry career professional, I think that anyone in society working that job any amount of time makes for a better society as a whole. I think that it can really breed awareness about self and others, as well as just how to treat people, right? So I say that, don't let my daughters hear that when they turn 18.
Checking In, a Lodging DEI chat, is produced by the Leon Thomas Group. To learn more, go to theleonthomasgroup.com. The Leon Thomas Group hires interns and recent grads to work as part of their production teams. As part of the experience that the interns and recent grads receive at the Leon Thomas Group, they work on videos and other commercial projects. Take a look at these four projects that were all completed by interns and recent grads of the Leon Thomas Group.
Renting is everything. It's style at your doorstep, off the runway and into your closet. It's every trend you've been dying to try and every designer you've yet to discover. It's wearing it your way every time and making it count everywhere you go. It's never worrying about what to wear because something new is always coming your way. That's why renting is everything. New styles, top designers, all for a flat monthly fee. Start your subscription at renttherunway.com.
Slow roasted over hickory fire and pulled by hand. This is the way pit pork has always been done. Pulled pork lovers, rejoice. The smoky old days are back at the Smoke Shack. From the creative team that brought you The Browning Project and Dead by Morning comes a new thriller that will change the way you look at white-collar crime forever. Fallen from the Sky.
Water. It's everywhere. We drink it, we bathe with it, we cook with it. Coffee's made with water. Toilets won't flush without it. It's used for washing clothes, dishes, utensils, pots, pans, floors, and our teeth. Plants and crops need water, animals drink it, and fish need it too. And don't forget, we can have a lot of fun in the water. Water. What will we do without it?
Folks, you're watching Checking In, a Lodging DEI chat. I'm Leon Thomas with Miranda Kitterlin Lynch, and our guest today is Greg DeShields. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, you can contact me, Leon, at the Leon Thomas Group. HickoryFi.com, or you can contact Miranda. And to contact Miranda Kitterlin Lynch, just Google Miranda Kitterlin Lynch. Greg, when someone is working at a line level position and they realize that this is something that they want as their career path, what do you suggest to them? How do they move into management, or how do they branch out into other areas of hospitality? What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I think it's important that you kind of think beyond the limits of what you see and what you do every day, or to at least be inquisitive about how certain things connect with you and what you do in your day-to-day activity. For example, if I work at the front desk and my responsibility is checking in people, well, I'm going to check in a lot of different people. I'm going to check in some individual guests who just find us and register or reserve and then stay at our hotel. Some may be specific groups that are coming in, and some may be part of a citywide convention. So that would be one of the places that I would say you'd want to be inquisitive and start to figure out, well, what is a citywide and how did it come to us through the Convention and Visitors Bureau? And what is a Convention and Visitors Bureau? What are the things that they do? It takes you out of just what you do from within that operational aspect of the hotel, but it's now also offering up to what is that economic driving engine that brings not just groups, but valuable resources to our local community. So that is amongst the ways that you begin to look further. For example, I recall for me, one of the things that really stood out in working operationally is building training programs for new employees. So that's really about workforce development. So if you're a front office manager, if you're a housekeeping supervisor or a housekeeping executive housekeeper, you want to figure out what is the best ways that I can teach my employees to be more efficient in the way that they work, more thorough and more detail oriented. So you create these training programs and you're trying to find a way to resonate information that can help to make an individual do their job better and help ultimately the organization to be more successful. But just that idea of thinking about what is involved in training and how I step out of my role as a housekeeping supervisor and focus on how I build training modules that offer the ability for someone to do their job better is a way to begin to evolve what your efforts and what your role might be. So that may take you from being a housekeeping supervisor to work within the human resources department and start to build training programs that would evolve for any employee, even if it's cross-functional, where they want to move from one department to another. So I think it's looking at those pieces that plug into what you do and realizing that sometimes those pieces will open up a whole new six-lane highway of opportunity for you and what you might want to do.
Mm-hmm. I know for me, and I love what your response there. One of the things that happened for me when I transitioned from line level forward facing to into management was the owner of the hotel group that I work for. He would come in and do these inspections, and he said, "Come on, you're coming with me. I'm going to show you what I'm looking for." Mm-hmm. Right, and I said, "I don't want to care about that. I'm going to miss tip money on the door. I can't go in." And he said, "I'm thinking long term for you. I'm thinking long term for you. Come on, let me show you what I'm looking for." And it helped me. And I didn't realize I was actually being trained for management. Right. And I hope that those that are listening and watching, if you're in a management position and you see that someone has some potential, grab them, take them, and start these things. Every training program doesn't have to be formal. There's ways to get people to move on. So it takes some folks having interest also in you. So I hope others will be able to do that. Miranda.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk a lot about mentoring and mentor opportunities. You know, that's a very low lift, high impact mentor opportunity that anybody can take advantage of, not just training, but guiding, right? And coaching. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. Greg, I want to switch a little bit and talk to you about diversity, equity, and inclusion. How have you seen this change in your years in industry, or have you seen it change? Have you seen any efforts differ? Have you seen any faces of organizations look differently? Just what is your take on, again, the changes that we've seen in this initiative?
Well, you know, throughout my career, it certainly has changed. You know, I was recruited in Johnson & Wales at a time when hotels were very much involved with their affirmative action programs and were trying to find ways to create access for more individuals of color. It then kind of evolved from that into efforts around multiculturalism and certainly issues in general about diversity. Now, I always say that, you know, this effort around diversity, equity, and inclusion really didn't start during the summer of 2020. It really began during the civil rights movement, and it continues to evolve. But I think specifically throughout my career began with that affirmative action program, which I felt was one of the contributing factors of how I was able to get a beginning of a career with an incredible brand like Hyatt Hotels. And then later, as it continued to evolve, the emphasis around multiculturalism really began to be defined in terms of economic value and focusing on diverse and multicultural communities and what dollars they can bring to a destination by way of there being more specific customized products and services that are available to those communities. But I think where we are today is that we're beginning to see that connection to what it means to be fully inclusive and welcoming of people and the economic value that's associated with it. And at the end of the day, where we sit today, especially in our industry, this focus is really around the business case. We understand that there's different political point of views that people may have and ideologies that people have, but as it relates to the business that we're in, we're here to welcome and treat every single guest with the best experience possible because of the economic value that it brings either to our properties or to our destinations. So as we say, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion has really evolved to be a significant business strategy. Now, how operators are able to integrate that within how they operate, especially within whatever the climate might be nationally or locally, is a big part of what strategy is all about. And how, as leaders, how do we thread that needle in order to kind of get to what is ultimately the balance that will accommodate the needs of our customers, as well as our stakeholders and our partners. So the long story short, I guess, to say, is that the evolution of diversity, equity, and inclusion began as early as the 1960s, will continue to where we are today, and will continue to evolve even further as we go forward. I think one really important piece, aside from really putting an emphasis around that it is a business strategy, is that it may not necessarily be completely always identified as DEI. It may be woven within different aspects, nuances of the business as a natural component of it, whether it's in marketing or whether it's in supplier diversity or whether it's in talent acquisition. It doesn't necessarily need to be called DEI in order to do that, because at the end of the day, we're ultimately trying to find a path to create a more welcoming and inclusive organization or environment. So I would say that absolutely, once again, it centers upon being a business strategy, but as we go forward, it may evolve into something different than what perhaps we've been identifying it for the last 3 years.
I think it's so important that you share that. Two big things stand out to me in what you've just shared. The first being that it's a business strategy, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again and again. Perhaps you are a person who does not value diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's fair to say that these people exist in business. However, regardless of where your beliefs and values lie, you probably do value profits, money, right? And so if we can say anything about these efforts, it's that it will benefit your bottom line, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but I would be mindful of it, though, because there are a variety of different ways of determining what the business benefit is. So we can certainly go to a quantitative perspective and say, because you expanded your markets to include more, I don't know, Black people, that you now see that you've increased your performance of your organization by 20%, or you've had more revenue that have been generated. But it can also be done from a qualitative perspective. It may not necessarily be because of the perspective that we want to raise money. It's more of how we want to raise the image of our organization. So how do we position ourselves to be an organization that people want to go to, if not as a guest, maybe even as an employee? What are the things that we can do that as an organization allows for us to be considered a employer of choice? And how do we create those environments that the talent will move our way? because if you can aspire to even think of it just from the perspective to become a competitive business organization because of the knowledge capital that you have and the expertise and the skills that you have, that really funnels down into the efficiency and the impact of an organization. And to that degree, it will help give you a competitive edge, which gets you back to the point of, can we raise more money? So I would not necessarily say that you have to look at it strictly from how we can make more money as an organization, because there are ways that we can position ourselves because of this, that we become an employer of choice, which means in a very competitive labor market that we're able to attract good talent.
Yeah, thank you so much for identifying that. That's an excellent point, absolutely. Leon, did you?
Yep, folks, you're watching, checking in, a Lodging DEI chat. I'm Leon. That's Miranda. We're the hosts of the show. Our guest today is Greg DeShields. To get in touch with Greg, because you may have some questions or want to contact him more to talk about some of the things we're already discussing, you can reach Greg at his website, gregdeshields.co. Go there and contact him and tell him through his website that you saw him on this show. And then he'll tell you to watch other episodes of this show, and then we'll have thousands of people watching every episode. So, Greg, thanks in advance for telling others to watch the show. Greg, one more question from me, and then we'll go into our signature questions of the day. There's many brands have many programs now designed to bring in more African American owners. Mm-hmm. And I see all those programs, but the talk of let's have more Black general managers, let's have more Blacks in leadership, that conversation's kind of going away, and the focus is now on ownership. Two-part question. Do you see an increased number of Black managers, and where should the industry's focus? Should it be on ownership? Should it be on managers? Where do you think the best line of attraction should be?
So I would say, Leon, that's such a great question. Thanks for asking me that. I would say from the very beginning that, you know, we still as an industry are navigating the loss of a number of super talented Black managers and Black leaders as a result of COVID. And many individuals, you know, departed from the industry and went into other aspects of the industry. So to some degree, you know, there's now a transition or an evolution of other individuals who will aspire to take those roles and evolve in their careers. I think there are far more many choices that individuals have, especially those who might be at a managerial level, that might cause them to, you know, make a difference between perhaps working in a consulting group or working in real estate as opposed to perhaps working in the tourism and hospitality industry. And I think the industry is doing a great job in building its brand and its reputation and attracting talent. I think specifically, though, to your question about owners or managers, and listen, I'm a big advocate for the work that the National Association of Black Hotel Owners, Operators, and Developers have done for many years to really encourage that more individuals move into Black hotel ownership. And, you know, it's been without any doubt a constant beat of the drum that, you know, the more Black hotel owners there are, probably the greater the number of opportunities there are for those who want to work in an organization where the ownership look like them. So I would be a strong advocate to encourage how individuals who are Black, who are at, whether they're at an HBCU or non-HBCU, that they're getting exposure to the concept of ownership. You know, I remember in sending some of those hotel ownership 101 classes, and it was amazing, you know, the financial investment that's needed just to have like a 35 room Nights Inn or something like that. So it is feasible to move in that direction. So I would be more inclined, especially as we kind of evolve in this industry, to continue to push that more individuals consider and pursue that idea of ownership. And if they are, in fact, in a managerial role, that they perhaps see that as how they take the talents and the skills that they have acquired and use that as writing the next chapter of what they want to do. But I would start off by just saying once again that I think the amount of Black managers has probably been a reduction because many may have left the industry as a result of COVID. Mm-hmm.
Let's do this. Let's have one more question. Miranda, you ask one more question, and then we'll go to our two signature questions of the day. But Greg, so that we can get prepared for those signature questions, just grab a pen so that after Miranda asks this question, and then when we go to our signature questions, you are ready to write the signature. Okay, go ahead, Miranda.
So I just want to circle back to how you and I met, which was working on the AHEAD initiative. And I know that we've had Brian Barker come on early in the show. I believe he was our first guest on the show to share what we were doing with AHEAD, but that was a little over a year ago, if not longer. Could you share with us your involvement with AHEAD and what you've seen and just kind of remind our listeners what this initiative is and how they can contribute if they so desire?
Well, I think a program like AHEAD is really a crucial tool in order for individuals to connect the opportunities of engaging with diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and the evolution of individuals through their academic learning. What I've certainly found from my involvement is that it's a great platform to share new ideas and new strategies around how we're able to incorporate a more inclusive environment for individuals who'd like to aspire in this industry, but also to connect those organizations and those partners that have great programs to plug into. You know, as I look back and a lot of the different ways that I was able to be a part of the AHEAD program from the very beginning, I think one of the things that attracted me to it was there was this creative initiative to build a bridge. And often there just aren't those pathways or those on routes for people to say, here's another way for me to evolve my career, or here's another way for me to be very participative in the industry. So I would probably use those as a best way for me to suggest the engagement around the particular program. And I give it an A+, by the way.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Leon?
Greg, you've made reference to Johnson & Wales University, that you are a graduate of Johnson & Wales. My oldest son, Aaron, is a graduate of Johnson & Wales also. Yes, he graduated, a long time ago, but he's a graduate of Johnson & Wales. And interestingly enough, I was working in industry at the time when he told me he wanted to go to Johnson & Wales because he wanted to be a chef and a restaurant manager, and I fought him on it. you're not going. No, you are not going into this industry. No. And my mom actually smacked some sense. I mean, she didn't literally hit me, but she smacked some sense into me and said, what's wrong with it? I mean, you didn't say you wanted to set up a shop on the corner and be a drug dealer or something like that. I mean, drug dealers were not legal then. You get the idea.
But, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. So my choice to go to Johnson & Wales was that I didn't want to necessarily be a chef, but I did want to be a restaurant manager. And I went for just the associate degree. And, you know, I fell in love with the school from the minute I got there. It was just such a personal feeling. But I had an incredible professor, Peter Van Cleet, who was like a 1950s hotel guy, who was one of the instructors who was in the process of building the 4-year hospitality program. And I was in the 2-year. So he was the one who encouraged me to get a hospitality degree, a 4-year degree. And I was in the first graduating class of the 4-year hospitality program at Johnson & Wales. I know I shouldn't say that. But anyway, it was such an incredible experience. And I learned so much about the hospitality industry beyond what I had even imagined from when I originally entered into the institution. And even still today, I look back on my time with Johnson & Wales in a warm and fond way.
Right on. Johnson & Wales, there you have it. It's now time for our two signature questions of the show. All right, here we go. Two signature questions of the show. Greg, put that pen up here so we can see the pen. And let's do, go ahead and sign. Let's see your signature. Two signature questions. Here's the first one. Have you ever had a Maryland crab cake?
Yes, I have.
And where did you have a Maryland crab cake?
At the Inner Harbor in Baltimore.
Ooh, the Inner Harbor in Baltimore. Okay, we're going to go just a little deeper. We'll give you a hand. It was in Maryland. And if you had it in Maryland, it wasn't called a Maryland crab cake like it was for the guest that's from Kansas City who came on the show and said, I had a Maryland crab. Shut up. You didn't have a Maryland crab. Where did you get it? Was it at Phillips or where?
It was at Phillips. And that was early on when they had just opened the Inner Harbor, and it was, you know, all of us, and Phillips was like the place to go. And, you know, if you're going to be there, you have to do the Maryland crab cake. And I had
to get a crab cake. Yes. And incidentally, you know, that whole Inner Harbor area, that's shut down now. That is no longer. There's a big change going on. A new development, city council just a couple of weeks ago voted on a brand new development idea for the Baltimore Inner Harbor. So the place that all the tourists and all used to go to, that's no longer there. I once had a restaurant there. I had a Boardwalk Fries in one of the Inner Harbor pavilions. And I knew that wasn't going to last when our sales one day was $8.39. Yeah, and that was like 15 years ago. This isn't going to last. But anyway, yeah. So Miranda, the second signature question of the day.
Yes. So I'll close this out with our last question, which is, Greg, if you could go back and tell your 20-year-old self either one piece of advice, one affirmation, anything, what would you say?
You know, I'm asked this question often, and one of the things that I even share it as advice, you know, I think having more confidence in knowing when it's time for you to move on. I think early in our careers, and I say that with a bit of caution. So I think early in our careers, and I remember when I came out of Johnson & Wales, I went into a management training program at Hyatt. You know, I felt that my career was prescribed, that someone was going to tell me it's time to go here, it's time to go here, and that you would wait for those opportunities to be presented to you. And, you know, as a young person who's trying to build your career, you certainly don't want to be too presumptuous about, you know, when you want to move. But what I had found after a few years of working in an organization, that it's a combination of you also wanting to be able to move on and do something else. And for me, I would say, if I look back at my 22, 23 year old, not that I would have done it exactly then, but I would have built up more of a degree of confidence about making a decision that it's time for me to move and do something else. Still obviously maintaining all the relationships that I had in advance of that. But I think that level of confidence is what allows people to be able to parcel out their career so that they can kind of build upon it and not necessarily have there be a period of where you just maybe stayed at the party a little bit too long. Not that that's a bad thing, but there was maybe something else that you could have done 5 years in advance of where you started. So that confidence to be able to move forward when you feel you're ready is what I would want to be recommended to me, and I would have lived with that.
That's great advice. That I think you could apply that advice not to just your career, but lots of aspects of life. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. Thanks for being with us. We're really happy that you were able to come on our show and spend some time with us. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
And folks, you can contact Greg through his website, gregdeshields.co. Let him know that you learned about his website through our show, and he'll ask you to watch more episodes of our show, and we'll just keep the whole thing cycling around. And if you would like to be a guest on Checking In a Lodging DEI Chat, you can contact Miranda. You can contact her by just Googling her name, Miranda Kitterlin Lynch, or you can contact me via email at leon@theleonthomasgroup.com. And this show is produced by the Leon Thomas Group. I'd like to thank our producer for today, Dr. Jay Rasenko, in the background for helping us out. And thanks to all the students and interns that will be helping in editing and the other things that we do at the Leon Thomas Group. Thanks again for watching, checking in, a lodging DEI chat. Take care.